Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America College Baseball Podcast. I'm Jacob Rudner, joined by my co-host, as always, Peter Flaherty. Peter, good to be back on the show with you. We got signing day coming up. Today is Tuesday, November 11th. It is on Wednesday, November 12th, that 2026 kids from across the country will be putting pen to paper with their future college programs, which may or may not put them into our purview. Whether or not they go pro, we'll find out in July. But that is the topic of today's show. Before we get into it, how are you? What's the latest in Flaherty land? And just checking in before we get to talking about this stuff.
I'm doing great. Like everyone else on the BA staff, plugging away at my prospect handbook chapter. Like you said, it's an exciting time of year on the amateur calendar, just given that it's National Signing Day tomorrow. There are always a few curveballs that are thrown on the day, maybe a couple of flips or a few flips. We'll see what tomorrow brings. And as far as Flaherty land goes, I'm back in the usual recording spot after last episode's bug debacle. We'll see. There's not been a confirmation on the bug's death, so we'll see if it reemerges here. I'm already looking up towards the ceiling. He's in my head, but we'll see how it goes today. But other than that, doing great and fired up to dive into some of these classes.
And if you're wondering, that was actually planned. That was Peter's plug to go listen to our last episode of the College Podcast. We're coming out every 2 weeks right now. In the off season, 2 weeks ago, Peter was attacked by some sort of creature over in his lair for recording his podcast. If you didn't hear it, go listen to it. Maybe we'll post the video on the internet too. But today, with your safety in mind, I wanted to talk about signing day. Like I said, this is a really interesting one. A couple classes, especially in the SEC, are looking particularly loaded. That is the case in 2026 and in 2027. However, unlike in previous years, there has been some coaching movement, especially with some teams at the top. Tony Vitello leaves in October for the San Francisco Giants. He becomes the first manager ever to go directly from the college game to the pros. How much does that shake things up? What do things look like around them? LSU has a great class. Miami has a pretty promising looking class. Stanford, some top commitments as they always have. And so let's just get into it broadly here, Pete. The elite classes this year feel particularly elite to me, maybe more elite than in years past. It is really, really loaded among these best classes. Who are the groups that stand out to you? And maybe beyond the obvious, LSU and Tennessee, like I said, are very firmly at the top of our rankings. They will be again next year. Who around them has stood out to you in this cycle?
Yeah, LSU and Tennessee are two of the super classes. I think Vanderbilt is also right there with them. Texas, as always, is right up towards the top. Stanford, as they continue to do year in and year out, even though the lack of success the last couple of seasons, they continuously put together high-quality recruiting classes and perhaps even more important, although the results haven't, shown themselves the last couple of years, their retention rate on recruits is the best of any school, I'd say, in the country that puts together classes that consistently include, draft prospects or high profile draft prospects, however you want to define that. This year, the streak might be bucked with, Tyler Spangler, but we'll see. Beyond that, Mississippi State, another quality class, sort of the usual suspects, I'd say, Florida as well. But I know that, that's somewhat of a touch and go type situation that we'll touch on as the podcast goes on. Clemson, another really good class. So sort of the usual players up near the top as well. And there are some sleeper classes like Central Florida, just like they did in 2025. They've got another handful of dudes who should make an impact if they get to campus as well. Virginia, Wake Forest. So as people kind of are sitting there and listening to me run through the names, I'm sure that, every class, everyone's kind of nodding along with being like, yep, that makes sense. But another fun crop of high school athletes.
And it is interesting because you look at all these schools that are bringing in elite talent right now and the roster rules are different. And so we're seeing classes that are really big for rosters that are getting smaller now down to 34 players again, under the new rules as things continue to change in the college landscape. And you also have to keep in mind for every high school kid that gets to campus is one less spot that you can give to a transfer. So in today's day and age, these teams are probably mapping things out differently. One thing I found interesting, though, Tennessee, LSU, Texas to a degree, Vandy, are all Vandy maybe a little bit different because of the way that they've recruited the portal in recent years. But all of these schools seem to be, at least to me, bringing in a very high volume of players in these high school recruiting classes. And we basically know that they're going to have to make cuts to that group. Is that something that surprised you to see so much volume at the top, or is it something that is kind of status quo? What stood out to you about the trend with roster shrinking and the transfer portal being as prevalent as it is? Was that something that caught you off guard this cycle?
It's a good question, because I know, you know, the new roster sort of constraints and reconstruction, it, you know, leads teams to sort of perhaps go back to the drawing board to an extent and figure out how they do things. But as far as recruiting goes, and for this 26 class, I don't think I'm necessarily too shocked with the number of players that each of these teams have committed. I think, especially when you talk about LSU and Tennessee, and, you know, Vanderbilt as well, like you said, but LSU and Tennessee, regular players and big time players at that, and the transfer portal. But they're also two schools that, especially in recent years, and LSU has it figured out more than any school in America, just across all facets of the program, you know, sort of how to build a roster. And I think that LSU and Tennessee have figured out how to find a happy medium of guys that you bring in via the portal, and then also guys and high profile guys that you bring in, you have committed since they were sophomores, juniors in high school, whenever, and develop yourself. And also when talking about the 26 class in general, you know, it's important to remember and keep in mind that while these classes are outstanding on paper right now and will be ranked at or near the top tomorrow come signing day, that, you know, it'll look drastically different perhaps come July. And there's a chance that a few or even more than a few are lost to the draft. So it's important to have depth. It's important to have star power at the top. These two schools fit the billing to a T. And I think that getting a number of them to campus and having a few pleasant surprises, LSU especially in years past with guys like William Schmidt and Omar Serna, getting a couple of pleasant surprise to campus, I think that's a very good problem to have.
Kratz pop quiz. What has 35 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, 27 essential vitamins and minerals, comes in excellent flavors like, of course, chocolate, vanilla, but chocolate peanut butter, my favorite, no added sugar, gluten-free, under $5 per meal, and is ready to drink.
Go out of the house, get yourself a Huel. Look at you. You even have one right there. Ready to smack that, John? Ugh, chocolate peanut butter, chocolate, and vanilla. Deliciosos.
Also, there is a new Daily Greens ready to drink. 42 vitamins, minerals, and superfoods. Only 25 calories on that one. 4 grams of fiber. There's flavors like blueberry, apple, peach. Huel makes healthy eating simple. They also just launched into Target stores nationwide. Try both products today with 15% off your purchase for new customers with the code FOUL at huel.com/FOUL. Use that code FOUL and fill out the post-checkout survey to help support FT.
Just looking quickly at that LSU class right now, elite talent, Logan Schmidt, Cooper Sides, Malachi Washington, Anthony Murphy, all guys who are in or around our top 100. There are several others who are just on the cusp. Nathaniel Davis, CJ Weinstein, Lucas Nowrocki, all candidates to be drafted very early in this year's draft and featured very prominently on our board. This is what you just brought up, I think, ties directly to a trend that is important right now, which is that we are seeing more talent getting to college than in years past. And who better to quote than Jay Johnson on this? Was having a conversation with the great LSU coach just a couple weeks ago, and he was saying the developmental landscape that exists in college right now is so much better than it ever has been in the past, that there are a lot of college prospects and pro teams even who will say to guys who they're looking at that you may benefit tremendously from going to play the college game, especially at the highest level, and see what that does for your stock. Is there truth to that? What have you noticed about those trends in recent years? And I guess with where baseball's headed in 2027, the expectation is two things. One, the minor leagues are going to shrink again. Two, the draft is going to shrink again. And therefore, I have a hard time seeing over the course of these next 2 years, agents and players and families not deciding to give college a lot longer of a look than maybe they would have in years past.
Yeah, and I'm with you. And you obviously have the impending potential lockout as well. So that throws a wrinkle in everything. But I agree. I think that, you know, it's a player by player and case by case basis as to how much you're going to benefit from going to school. And then obviously it depends which program you're committed to. All of, you know, a lot of these schools, and you can really argue for all of them. Some more than others are, you know, great at developing players and, you know, are, you know, can develop a prospect. But, you know, I think if you're a kid that's committed to LSU, Tennessee, Texas, Vanderbilt, Stanford, and any of these, you know, high level, potentially high academic institutions, especially Stanford and Vanderbilt, you know, it's important to take a really close look at, you know, perhaps going to college and pursuing the college route for 2 to 3 years. Cause I think, you know, Tennessee and LSU, I know we've said them their names like 10 times already in the podcast, but they know how to develop their guys, and are really, really good at it. You know, they've, LSU especially, they've won two of the three last national titles. Obviously, their transfer portal classes have had a huge part in that, but so has homegrown talent. Tennessee, same deal in 2024. Whole lot of homegrown talent that spearheaded the national championship effort, one of which is already in the big leagues right now with Christian Moore. So, I mean, I think that, you know, you, if you're these programs, you know, you can really make a pretty concerted effort and kind of put on the full court presses to say, hey, you know, we know you've got top 2 to 3 to 4 round interest. We'll call it top 5 round interest in the draft. But, you know, here are, you know, reasons A, B, C, and D as to why we think that, you know, not only coming to school and being with us for 3 years is a good fit, but it's also going to benefit you more in the long run, and turn you into a no doubt top 2 or 3 round prospect and make you a lot more money in the process.
Well, step away from those superpower schools even for a second. You look at a school like Kentucky, which I don't think is considered a, you know, long-standing superpower in baseball. Obviously, they've been better in recent years. They recently made an Omaha trip. But to get a guy like Tyler Bell, who was drafted in the second round by the Rays to campus, and now he's your starting shortstop, that's a pretty big deal. I mean, you're talking about a guy who easily could have signed for, you know, 7 figures and started his pro career. Instead, he's playing college baseball and will be draft eligible again this upcoming cycle. You look at UCLA. That's a roster that is almost entirely homegrown. They have lots of top talent. Angel Cervantes is on campus and is going to pitch either in their weekend rotation this year or start midweeks or pitch out of their bullpen in an important role. So we are seeing, even outside of the LSU, Tennessee, Texas structure, there are kids who are getting to campus and giving these schools a chance to compete. UCLA, of course, was in the College World Series last year. The running expectation is that they will be our, and presumably many other rankings websites, number one team heading into 2026. And that is largely due to the fact that they cleaned up on the high school side. They beat the draft in several areas. And to your point, they're able to sell the fact that we're going to develop you and turn you into an earlier round selection. Before we continue to talk about some more interesting signing day dynamics, I wanted to go through a couple of these classes and maybe talk about some guys who could do an Angel Cervantes or a Tyler Bell and get to campus and make a difference for their schools in 2027. Let's start, Peter, with Texas. Great class. Grady Emerson, Trey Rangel, Bo Peterson among our top 100 prospects right now. James Jorgensen, Brody Bumilla, Brady Murrieta, also guys who are early round talents. There are more. Who are some of the players, Emerson, of course, included, who stand out to you in this Texas Longhorns class?
Yeah, so Emerson is the guy in the class. He's the potentially the guy in the high school class, along with Jacob Lombard and Spangler and a couple of others. I'd be floored beyond belief if there's a world in which Grady Emerson gets to campus. Like, it'd be not doing our due diligence if we just sit here on the podcast in November and say Grady Emerson is not getting to campus. Like, we can't say that, but it'd be one of the biggest surprises in recent years. So for all intents and purposes, he's not getting there, but, you know, checks a whole lot of boxes, you know, as a draft prospect, left-handed hitting, shortstop with smooth actions, pretty intriguing hit power combo. You know, a mature hitter at that, you know, he lets the ball travel, uses the entire field, high level approach. It's kind of a hit first, approach, but you know, there's more power that's come along as he's filled out and sort of continued to grow. And there's bat speed and strength there. Runs well. He looks the part of obviously a slam dunk first round pick, slam dunk top 15 round pick. He'll be in play first overall. Trey Rangel, really athletic right-handed pitcher with a ton of stuff. Super quick arm. There's a little bit of a head whack in there in the delivery, but the fastball has been up to 98. He can really spin his breaking ball. It's eclipsed the 3,000 RPM range. It's a plus pitch for me. And I think if you're looking for potentially like an Angel Cervantes type or Tyler Bell, I don't know if he'll go in the top two rounds like Cervantes and Bell did, but the one guy who I kind of have circled as, you know, I don't know if you want to call it like a sleeper or someone, you know, whatever you want to call it, but a prominently ranked guy who might end up getting to campus, or I wouldn't be totally floored if he gets to campus. And this is, by the way, not based on anything, not based on dope I'm getting from, you know, coaching staffs, agents, whatever. This is just total gut feel, throwing a dart. But Bo Peterson, I wouldn't be like shocked beyond belief if he ends up making it to campus. Big kid, 6'3", 210 pound, left-handed hitter, powers the calling card here. You know, he can really, really impact the baseball. Kind of curious to see where he ends up defensively. It might be a corner outfield spot when all is said and done, but an appealing power first profile is to go along with an above average arm. Like, there's a chance he develops in the 25 to 30 plus home run power when all is said and done. And then Brody Bumila, I got to shout out the fellow Mass boy from the Commonwealth, 6'8" left-handed hitter, or excuse me, 6'8" left-handed pitcher. Very few prospects in general fit into the 6'8" lefty bucket, let alone when you're in high school. He missed all of the 25 season recovering from, I think he had elbow surgery, but fastball up to 95 already. Slider and a changeup. The changeup to me is a particularly appealing offer. Look forward to getting out and seeing him this spring. But you know, as people hear me ramble along about the Texas class, it's another high quality group put together by Coach Schlossnagel and company. You know, regardless of how many of these guys make it to campus, you know, I expect even more than just these top few guys to end up in a good spot, you know, in our final draft rankings and all that. And they'll be ranked prominently on tomorrow's initial 26 rankings, and they'll be the same in next fall's final 26 ranking.
Onward we go. This is not an unfamiliar topic to listeners of the College Baseball Podcast. Stanford obviously does an outstanding job of getting its top commits to campus. They have a history of being excellent in that category. However, this could be the year, as you said earlier in the show, that bucks the trend. Tyler Spangler, our number three overall prospect, is committed to the Cardinal. Whether or not he ends up on campus, however, is a big question, because he is set to make millions of dollars, shortstop from De La Salle High School in Concord, California, 6'3", 195 pound left-handed hitter. There's a lot to like in that profile. You ask me today, is he going to end up on campus? No, probably not. I really doubt it. But certainly an interesting person to have in the fold. As far as the list goes, Archer Horn, two-way player, shortstop and right-handed pitcher, also out of California, 6'2", 200 pounds, left-handed swinger, right-handed thrower, is another top 100 prospect headed the Cardinal way. What do you like about this class? And I guess also, you know, outside of that 100 range, there are some guys who are really intriguing. Bryce Hill and shortstop Alex Harrington both come to mind in particular.
Yeah, what I like about the class is Tyler Spangler headlining it. But no, in all seriousness, it's another good group put together. You know, Spangler is the headliner, sort of like Grady Emerson. You know, he'll be in play within those first 5 to 10 or so picks, 5 to 10, 15 picks. And when you start to bucket these guys out, he fits into a lot of them. 6'3", left-handed hitting shortstop, good contact skills. You know, you can project on the power. You know, the quick hands, and then, you know, on the dirt, you know, he's really smooth and fluid actions, with a strong arm and soft hands. And then Archer Horn is, as you touched on, legit two-way guy. Heater's been up to 95, good swing from the left side. You know, there's legit extra base power already in game. And then he'll kind of let it eat a little bit more in batting practice. But, you know, in what's the case with a lot of these guys, he continues to just mature physically and add strength to his frame. He'll grow into more home run power, in-game home run power, at that. But, you know, it's an appealing profile on both sides of the baseball. On the mound, mentioned it, fastball up to 95 with natural run. And then his moneymaker secondary is the changeup that plays really well off his fastball. And, you know, he throws it with conviction. And then he'll spin a mid-70s curveball reasonably well. So, as is the case with any Stanford commit, kind of a difficult sign, perhaps. So we'll see how many of these guys end up making it to campus. But as you said, even outside the top 100, outside of the top 100 overall players, like, Bryce Hill's a really interesting player. You know, his fastball's already been up to 98. Commanded it better this year than he did in 2024. Alex Harrington and his twin brother Hunter. Alex is the more prominent prospect of the two, but kind of a bouncy, quick twitch athlete with an exciting tool set. And then Dylan Moss, the brother of Dean Moss, who is the 67th overall pick in the 2025 draft. Dylan, one of the, better prep catchers in the class. You know, might not be the top or one of the top few guys, but he is, he's another strong player. Caught him well down in Jupiter, put a couple of good swings on the baseball, drove a couple of baseballs deep into the right center field gap. Fares reasonably well behind the plate. I think, like any amateur catcher, there's low hanging fruit to clean up, but there's arm strength there. He receives fairly well. So, again, another really good class put together by the Cardinal. I wish I had this stat. I always wish I had this stat off the top of my head when, like, I can't recall it, but it's something crazy. Like, since 2015 or 2016, they've lost, like, maybe one guy.
I think that's like one or two guys,
which is just obscene. So they've done as good a job as anyone. They've done the best job, actually, of anyone in the country. So, that will be put to the test, though, without a doubt, this year. But it's put to the test every year, and they still seem to figure it out. But they also haven't had a player of Tyler Spangler's caliber committed to them. So I think that he will probably be an anomaly to the trend, though. Yeah. Time will tell.
Time indeed will tell. Let's talk about one more ACC class before we move on here. Wake Forest really has caught my attention in the lead up to this signing day. First of all, the top of the class, the star power here is great. Carson Bolleman, the left-handed pitcher, is their number one overall commit. He is a top 20 prospect for us, 6'4", 210 pounds, southpaw. Andrew Costello, you mentioned prep catchers and guys who are really making a name in that position. He's one of them, a top 70 prospect for us. And shortstop Ethan Bass rounds out their list of top 100 commits. What impresses me, though, Peter, is that the depth of this group is really good as well. Ethan Watchman, a right-handed pitcher, is committed to them, 6'4", 210-pound righty. Out of Colorado, you got TJ McQuillan, who's a productive third base outfielder, left-handed hitter. Brady Marshall, a bit of an undersized third baseman who's been good. Will Holden, who you and I caught really well in Jupiter, catcher with some, plus raw power at this point. This is a group that has a ton of depth. What is what's standing out to you about Wake and what Coach Tom Walter has going here?
Yeah, you hit on it. Depth is kind of the name of the game here. Depth has been the name of the game and a common theme among all of these top recruiting classes. I don't think you end up with one of the top recruiting classes in the country if you don't have depth. But Carson Bowman, there's an argument to be made that he is the top prep pitcher in this year's class. I think, again, we always talk about buckets and how many a guy fits into, but he's left-handed. He's 6'4". It strikes. It's stuff. Really clean and kind of repeatable delivery. The fastball has been up to 96. Locates it to both sides of the plate for strikes. And he also has a multiple breaking ball shapes in his arsenal, curveball in the high 70s to low 80s, and then a harder slider that's distinct in shape in the low 80s. It'll kind of blend with the curveball at times and get more slurvy, but at its best, it has, you know, pretty sharp two-plane tilt, and he'll mainly rely on the fastball, slider, curveball trio, but, you know, he'll top off his four pitch mix with a mid 80s changeup, predominantly to righties. But he was the best pitcher on Team USA's 18U national team this summer. You know, there's a real chance he ends up being a top 20 to 25 overall pick when all is said and done. Andrew Costello, another guy that we saw in Jupiter, he was really, really good. And I came away really impressed in the look that I got at him. So, I mean, he's older for the class, but, you know, he's an impact player and showed as such on both sides of the baseball down in Jupiter. I mean, it's kind of a hitterish look, really strong, compact build. You know, he keeps his hands really, really quiet. You know, there's some barrel speed, and the barrel really accelerates through the zone. You know, I think what stood out to me the most with him, obviously behind the plate, you know, I was impressed with the skill set there. You know, he's got an above average arm, consistently gets off quick transfers. The catch and throw skills I thought were really good. And he flashed it in game as well. The baseball sense was really, really impressive. I wish I had my Jupiter notes in front of me, but there were a number of different plays where, like, his baseball sense made a difference. I think he took an extra base on, like, a somewhat errant throw or read the flight of the ball coming in from the outfield, took an extra base. Like, there were just a few difference-making plays I think one was in a game that the Canes won by one run in the 2-1 game or 1-0 game against the Team Puerto Rico team.
Yeah, but that was a great game, by the way.
Yeah, it was. And he made a huge difference in that one. So he's a fun player. Another guy that ranked in the top 100, Ethan Bass, as you said, one of the top prep hitters in the region, his region being the Midwest, but smooth swing from the right side, kind of a pull-oriented approach as well. And then Ethan Waxman, a kind of a classic, you know, Wake arm commit, you know, 6'4", 210, really, really projectable. Prominent riser in the 26 class. Fastball's kind of crept up into the mid-90s. It's a bigger heater. And, you know, he kind of has a decent field of spin, a tighter slider. So that's another quality group for Coach Walter.
The countdown is on and holiday shopping season is officially here. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. Don't wait. The most meaningful gifts get scooped up fast, and now's the perfect time to cross names off your list. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, making every gift feel meaningful and truly one of a kind, like the NFL Game Day Bingo Set, customizable with your favorite team's colors and name, perfect for your football-loving family and friends. Not shopping for a sports fan? Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from avid gardeners to home chefs. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. When you're shopping at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. And one thing I'll mention, that Canes game against Team Puerto Rico was started by another Wake Forest commit, Soren Etheridge, out of the Phoenix area, recently committed in the 2027 class. You and I were excited by him and Jupiter. Let's talk about some signing day drama. I think that that's something, as somebody who used to cover college football, that people think about signing day drama, big flips, and, you know, you pick the wrong hat, you put on the table. That's a football thing. It is, for the most part. There is much less drama as you move throughout the sports. Basketball has less drama than football. Baseball has less drama than basketball. However, this year, I do think there is the potential for some interesting signing day movement or pre-signing day movement in the final 24 hours here. There have been some big moves. As I mentioned at the top of the show, Tony Vitello became the first coach to go from college to a pro dugout as a manager. They have a great class. You and I talked about it already on the show. What are you hearing? Is there potential for movement with this Tennessee group? How concerned would you be if you're a Vols fan listening to this podcast in terms of, do we keep the guys who we have in the fold?
Well, first, it's an outstanding A-plus class and one that will rank in the top three tomorrow. But as far as being concerned or being alarmed, if I'm a Vols fan or, you know, a follower of the game, I wouldn't really be all that concerned. I think that the entire situation, as we've touched on, is super unique for a number of reasons, but one of those being is the lack of impact it had, and the lack of impact in the best way it's had on the recruiting class. Like, and I think that's due in large part to Coach Elander taking the reins. He was Coach Vitello's right-hand man, ace recruiter, is now the guy on the Tennessee staff, still an ace recruiter. We saw a number of prospects in the 26 and 27 classes come out and voice their support and public endorsement of Coach Elander. And, you know, obviously there's been a ton of work done behind the scenes to keep all of these high-quality players together and these classes intact. It wasn't just kind of a, you know, sit back and relax. But I think that, you know, Coach Elander and his staff have done a fantastic job of maintaining these relationships with these players and laying out what Tennessee baseball is going to look like in the future. And, you know, these guys have remained all in. So I wouldn't expect any subtractions from Tennessee's class tomorrow.
I would certainly agree with that. One interesting dynamic that exists within this Tennessee storyline is who would hire. Almost immediately after Tennessee promoted Josh Elander from associate head coach to replacing Vitello at the top of the program, they went out and hired Chuck Jaralaman from Florida. Jaralaman, of course, was Florida's associate head coach and recruiting coordinator. He has been known now for a number of years as to be one of the best recruiters in the SEC, if not the entire country. And now he's on the same team as Josh Elander, who, by the way, he coached at TCU in 2012. My question here is, does Florida need to worry? And if so, who are the recruits that it needs to worry about? I'll throw this out onto the table right now. Brady Harris, the outfielder commit, one of Florida's top recruits right now in the class, is somebody who was very closely recruited by Jaralaman. They had a great relationship. And so, you know, my second question to you would be, how much do those dynamics matter in baseball? Because we see them come into play in football all the time.
Yeah, that's a class to watch. And you laid out why. Obviously, Coach Jaralaman going to Tennessee was a massive hire for a lot of reasons. You mentioned his recruiting chops, and, you know, they've shown year in and year out with Florida. And that's also just, you know, hugely, hugely beneficial. It's hard to quantify exactly how beneficial it is for Tennessee going forward. They promoted their former ace recruiter to the head coach, and they pick up another ace recruiter and Coach Jaralaman. So I'll certainly be watching the bigger fish in that class tomorrow, especially, like you said, guys like, you know, Brady Harris, who, you know, tools are the name of the game there with Harris, but in a couple of others. I think that you know, there is perhaps reason to believe that, you know, like you said and sort of alluded to on the football side, there's a chance there's a flip or two in there where they flip to TBD. But that is the, that group of Gators is one I'll be watching closely, because I think that's an interesting situation all around down there in Gainesville, and we'll see what ends up, you know, coming of it. But I think that, you know, I wouldn't be totally blown away if there is some signing day movement.
We haven't heard a public update on Coach O'Sullivan and what the situation is there with him. For those who are unfamiliar, late last month, it was announced that Kevin O'Sullivan, longtime head coach at Florida, was going on an personal leave to take care of personal issues. No further details other than that, no timeline for return. It is now, of course, November 11th, and there has not been any movement at the top of that program. They hired Tom Slater, former longtime professional baseball coach, who is now the associate head coach and acting head coach. After Girolamo left, he was the interim head coach at the time. Although, this is important for what we just discussed, Kevin O'Sullivan is making recruiting calls. I've talked to a number of Florida commits, including some at the top of the class, who have said that they have heard from Sully. They've had conversations with him. And so, you know, I wonder this as well. If there is some indication behind the scenes, even if it's not out there yet, that O'Sullivan is in a good place and his personal matters have been taken care of and a return is imminent, does that relationship salvage part of this class, especially in an era where schools like Tennessee and LSU and Oregon State and Stanford have full classes and we are up against a roster limit here? How much do those two things combine to make an impact for you?
I would have to imagine it makes a pretty big one. I mean, you know, you're, as a prospective recruit, you're looking for a lot of things, but I think coaching staff stability is certainly one that you're also taking into account and valuing a lot. So, I mean, you know, I think if you're a kid that's signed to play for the University of Florida in the class of 2026, and, you know, you're hearing from Coach O'Sullivan, like, hey, just check in and seeing how things are going. And, you know, you know, on your end that, you know, if you do end up making it to campus and getting to Gainesville, that Coach O'Sullivan will be your head coach. I think that plays a huge part in staying true to your commitment, and, you know, not wavering from that. But, you know, if that ends up not being the case, obviously that is, that's also a big factor in what the final decision ends up being and, you know, what school you put pen to paper for on National Signing Day. So I guess we'll see tomorrow, you know, sort of just how, you know, sort of maybe a little bit of a pulse check on the situation, just given how that goes. Because I think, you know, that'll be something that I'm watching closely and I know you will be as well.
All right, Pete, we're about to get out of here, but I got one final question for you that I didn't prepare you for before the show. Sometimes I do this to Peter, and this is one of those times. On the spot, Pete, who's your favorite recruiting class in the 2026 cycle before signing day?
This will be kind of a spoiler alert because they'll rank number one tomorrow, but I got to go with Vanderbilt. And I know that we spent a lot of time on the podcast talking about Tennessee and LSU's classes, both of which will rank in the top three as well. Texas will rank in the top five. So, I mean, those schools are set in really, really prominent spots as well. But, you know, Vanderbilt for me is the top class in 2026. And they also, not to the extent of Stanford, no one is to the extent of Stanford, but they also have that wrinkle that plays in their favor, which is that they are a high academic institution. And that plays a part in retaining some of the top end talent in their class. Who that ends up being when all is said and done, you know, we won't know for 8 months. But Coach Blankmeyer, you want to talk about ace recruiters. He fits the description to a T, and he's been that way at all of his stops at Wake Forest, at Duke, now at Vanderbilt, driving that bus. For me, it's a when and not an if he lands a big time Power Four head coaching job. And whenever he does, I mean, that school and program is going to be beyond lucky. So, I mean, he's done an outstanding job in Nashville. There's a ton of talent throughout the class. Obviously, I think they have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 top 100 recruits. which is the most of, I believe, any school in the country. And it's just littered with top end talent and high level dudes. Shortstop Aiden Ruiz, no doubt, plus defender. It's a whole lot of this is what it looks like at shortstop, to go along with, you know, really high level contact skills. But the defense with him is outstanding. Eric Booth, Joseph Contreras, Keon Johnson, Eli Hurst, Sean Duncan, who we both saw really well down in Jupiter, RJ Cope, yep, who also stood out in Jupiter. The list goes on and on and on, with the level of talent that Vanderbilt has committed. So that's probably my favorite class. And, you know, I think it speaks volumes just given the quality of LSU's class, the quality of Tennessee's class, Texas's depth, Stanford's depth. You know, Vanderbilt for me probably takes the cake.
All right, I'm going to give an answer that people are going to dislike, Peter. I'm going to do something weird here. You talked about the top recruits, and obviously there are a couple classes that you could pick from: Vandy, LSU, Tennessee, Texas, who you mentioned, all who are going to rank in the top five of our recruiting rankings when they come out on November 12th. And those are great classes. This is not me saying that I don't like any of those schools. However, I'm going to ride with the Bruins on this one. I think that they've got a good thing going here with getting guys to campus and then showing that the developmental track is viable out in Westwood right now. They have a team that's going to contend for a national championship. They have the number one overall prospect in the 2026 draft, Rock Chulowski. And then they have this group of incoming high school players who I find very interesting. It's a good group. And so I do wonder if, you know, a school like UCLA that's going to recruit a bunch of guys who may or may not get drafted. I mean, they do have a higher rate of commitment among players who should reach campus. This has a chance to be another really good group. You know, Jaden Jackson is a very interesting player. Taden Krogsgaard is somebody who I'm going to highlight here before we close out the show. You and I have seen him well, especially in Jupiter. Right-handed pitcher with a good slider. He was previously committed to Cal State Fullerton. He's now a Bruins commit. So great flip towards the end of the cycle there. Somebody who I think is going to be quietly prominent come draft time. So I'm going to go with the Bruins. It's an interesting pick, but I like that class.
I like that one as well. It's a good pick. TBD as to where they rank on the 25, at least the initial signing day one. And another member of the class who I think is interesting and, you know, who sort of has, you know, potentially like make it to campus and pitch your way into a really prominent draft spot is Robert Zimmerman, 6'6", yeah, lefty. We both saw him in person down in Jupiter. You know, there's some rawness to his game, and he's very much a moldable ball of clay, but he's a 6'6 lefty with a little bit of now stuff, obviously tons of projection remaining. I think that he's someone that's obviously a high follow out west for this year's draft. But even more so if he makes it to campus, watching him develop under the guise of Coach Savage and company, you know, there's a real chance he ends up being a high impact arm if he does make it to Westwood.
I've had conversations with people who believe that if he does get to Westwood, he could quickly become somebody who is an early round prospect. As you just said, there are some college coaches who are excited about that stuff and think that it belongs in college. So, you know, there you go. Kind of take that as a plug for us too. Think about college. We got lots of college content over at baseballamerica.com. Peter and I working on offseason recruiting rankings. We got some stories about who we think are going to impact the 2026 season at a high level. And again, that's baseballamerica.com/college. Also check us out on YouTube at Baseball America. Tons of content going up there all the time. Reminder, we do come out once every 2 weeks right now in the offseason. But next week, you can listen to Peter on the Draft Podcast with Carlos Collazo. They do a lot of, you know, obviously talking about amateur stuff over there as well. And so you should check them out. But for us, that's going to do it for this episode of the Baseball America College Baseball Podcast. For Peter Flaherty, I'm Jacob Rudder. We'll talk to you next time.